I don't think she ever gets actually happy. Jack was voicing the thought of them all. The only time she looked really happy, Rosie said, was when I took those photos of her with my birthday food. She even comes out happy on the photos. Let's think around that, William said. They accordingly sat and thought around that. There's one thing certain, William remarked. There's no point in suggesting another party, even if you took 1,000 photos of her and her stuffed eggs. They all took this point. The word party was clearly to be avoided at all costs. She might like to be immortal, Rosie suggested. I mean, we're all going to try and be immortal, and I think most people would like to be if they could. Her? Immortal? William let out a fair copy of one of his father's sardonic laughs. I don't see why not, Jack said. As one unlikely ever to win immortality himself, as one of the great silent majority of the irretrievably ordinary, he felt bound to stand up and be counted with Mrs. Fosdyke. And in any case, Tess said thoughtfully, she doesn't actually have to be immortal. She merely has to be under the impression that she will be, and there is one way she'd think that. They all looked hopefully at her. A portrait, she said. Rosie could do her portrait. Oh, no, Rosie cried. Not her! Why not? Tess asked. You can do anybody, Rosie, if you really try. You did Grandma. I think that if you could do Grandma, you could do anybody. The only thing is, Jack said, that Rosie's portraits do seem a bit doomed. I mean, they're jolly good, but they do seem to trigger things off. They do not, squeaked Rosie indignantly. The others, however, knew that Jack had made a pertinent point. Rosie's portraits often went the same way as Bagthorpe parties. Even the impressive portrait of Grandma had been achieved only after 2 previous abortive attempts, one of which had gone up in flames, and the other been trampled on by Rosie herself. Mrs. Fosdyke knew about this, and would almost certainly regard an invitation to sit for Rosie with the profoundest suspicion. She would be torn, Tess said, between vanity and terror. We must put the proposition to her and pray that vanity wins the day. But where could I do her? Rosie objected. The dining room's all burned up, and the sitting room smells, and I'm not doing her outside. People's faces don't look interesting when they're outside. You can do her in the kitchen, William told her. Or else, she could make some meringues or something, and you could put those in as well. It'd be an added inducement. All in all, this scheme seemed the best they could come up with. They realized that the bait was not by any means irresistible, and managed to add a few extras by way of further incentive. In the attic they found a large gilt frame surrounding an oil painting of some depressed-looking Highland cattle. This was in the attic because nobody could stand to look at it, and it had come out only once in the last 20 years, to cover one of Daisy's mottos when she had been in her writing-on-walls phase. They took their mother into their confidence about the plot to lure Mrs. Fosdyke back to Unicorn House, and obtained her consent to remove the painting from the frame. Mrs. Bagthorpe was at least as keen as anyone else to retain the services of Mrs. Fosdyke, because her whole future as Stella Bright seemed to depend on it. "If Fosie's going to be framed," William said with satisfaction, "she might as well be framed properly. If we take this down with us and show it to her, she'll think she's going to be an instant great master. It'll swing the balance. You'll see." They decided that they would all visit Mrs. Fosdyke that afternoon, with the exception of Daisy, who would be represented by her missive. Mr. Bagthorpe, when he was apprised of the situation, was pessimistic about its outcome. "She'll never sit," he told them. "She never sits. And even if she does, the buns will begin to burn in the middle, or the stew to stick, or whatever, and the whole pantomime will start all over again." When challenged to suggest a better plan for luring Mrs. Fosdyke back to the house, he was unable to do so. "And if she doesn't come," William told him, "you won't get much script-writing done." Mr. Bagthorpe quieted down after this, contenting himself with saying that he hoped Rosie would have the good sense to make the likeness flattering. "A true likeness," he said, "would send Mrs. Fosdyke's teeth into a galloping decline. It would also have the effect of a Medusa's head on other people," he maintained. "Lop a couple of inches off her nose," he advised, "and try to get her looking human if you can." Straight after lunch, the young Bagthorpes set off across the meadow to the village, taking turns to carry the large frame in pairs. When Mrs. Fosdyke came to her door, she opened it only a crack, which seemed to indicate that she, like Aunt Celia, had totally lost her sense of cosmic security. "Now what?" she snapped ungraciously. "You're bad, wicked children, you are. How children ever got to be so unfeeling and persecuting, I'll never know. And what are you doing with that great thing?" "Look, Mrs. Fosdyke," said William, who had been appointed spokesman because, he claimed, he knew how to be tactful. "We're really sorry about that box of chocolates. We solemnly swear that we gave them in absolute good faith, and we can prove it. Can we come in?" Mrs. Fosdyke looked uncertain. "We swear we haven't got any maggots," Rosie said, adding, "Ow!" as Tess kicked her ankle. It had been previously agreed that certain loaded words, such as party, anniversary, fire, flood, and maggots, were to be totally eschewed during the forthcoming interview. They would act, William said, as triggers, and send Mrs. Fosdyke into an immediate decline. He was evidently right about this, because she let out a little scream and cried, "Don't talk about it! Don't talk about it!" "We won't," William promised. "Can we come in, then?" After a hesitation, she reluctantly held the door open, and they passed through in silence. Jack noticed that the bunch of flowers was still lying where she had put them on the table. Mrs. Fosdyke had evidently suspected them of being booby-trapped. He could not help feeling that this was sad.